Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 110. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Wednesday, Steelers Nation. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, you might be getting to work by boat today. It has been raining for about 12 hours here. Hopefully the weather's a bit better in Vegas than it is in Pittsburgh, Dave.
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful yesterday. I think we got some windy and maybe some rain actually coming in over here soon. Alex, I have a favor to ask for you on this Wednesday here. Mm-hmm. Regarding both the Pirates and the Penguins. Okay, I'm going to need you to not go to any any games. Until we get some, the Pirates are 5-0 going for their sixth win, today, started the season undefeated there. So, I know you're, when is the last time? I think you're like 0-9 or 10, the last few Pirates games, that you've gone to. So I'm going to have to ask you to stay away from the Pirates until they suffer their first, loss. And then second, you know, the Penguins are trying to miraculously climb back in this thing. So I can't have you anywhere near, you know, their barn in these upcoming days here. Okay. So, do us all a favor, take one for the team and just watch it on TV. Okay.
I will perform my civic duty of staying in my office and not leaving the house, not even threatening going outside to upset this balance of this run. The Pens and the Pirates are on it. The Pens are just saying, let's be the Steelers. Let's just suck for a while and then make this crazy comeback late. And so it is a funny, the uniformity in Pittsburgh sports.
I tell you, it's amazing the start that the Pirates have had, and you know, look like the Penguins were left for dead. They're trying to get back in this thing. They got a big game coming up in the Capitals. But enough of Pirates Depot and Penguins Depot here. We actually got a few things to talk about today.
We do some draft talk. We'll talk about my mock draft that went up on Tuesday, but we'll start with some news that came across late on Tuesday evening. And we'll start in the free agency portion of the offseason while things are winding down. Things may not be done before the draft on April 25th. Pittsburgh Steelers reportedly hosting linebacker Kalik Hudson for a visit on Tuesday. No contract's been announced. Don't know the status of that. Typically, when guys leave Pittsburgh, it's often they don't come back, but it has happened in past years. Quan Alexander, after a lengthy delay from his initial visit, you know, came back to Pittsburgh last August. But Hudson, a local native, went to McKeesport High School. Went to Michigan, was kind of a tweener hybrid safety linebacker coming out fifth round pick of the Washington Commanders in 2020, played primarily on special teams, but got some work on defense last year, playing over 400 defensive snaps, 74 tackles. Pittsburgh clearly still looking for some inside linebacker help. Why we've seen Aaron Curry on the pro day trail so much. So maybe in lieu of a draft pick, they'll go with a veteran like Hudson. But although he remains, as of this recording here Wednesday morning, unsigned.
Yeah, we'll see what happens later on today if they sign him or not. You have to imagine if they do ink him, that's going to be a veteran benefit contract or somewhere close to it, right?
Right around there, I would assume. But he still got some youth, and he did get to play some defense last year and boost his stock. So, you know, obviously he would come in Pittsburgh primarily for special teams, and they could use that because your presumed kind of starting three inside linebackers aren't going to play heavy snaps there in Patrick Queen, Landon Roberts, and whatever Cole Holcomb. Whenever he becomes available, you do have, of course, Mark Robinson there, but may want to look for somebody that has a bit more kind of defined special teams ace skill set. So we'll see on Hudson, but makes sense. Obviously, he would have a chance to come back home if he does end up signing. It would be for cheap, whether it's minimum or slightly above, and somebody that, you know, got some burn on defense last year. Pittsburgh, I think, to their calculation, Dave, is they were so decimated inside linebacker last year, they want to secure as much depth as possible there if there are more injuries. And given Holcomb's uncertain status, Roberts, you know, being a free agent after this year, et cetera, makes sense to target another guy at that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And within that, though, this team now has 74 players under contract on their way to 90. So take your shoes off. 90 minus 74 equals 16, right?
Yep.
All right. So if it's 16 and you got what, 7 draft picks right now?
Yeah, 7 draft picks. Yep.
And you usually have, I don't know, what, 9 or 10? Well, last year was a lot fewer.
It was like 6, I think, last year.
I would imagine that was a little bit of a rarity. I expect that number to get back up closer to 9 or 10. Long story short, there's and look, they'll add, you know, some of these guys under contract right now to futures guys. A couple of those guys might go out the door. But for lack of a better description here, this team's probably about done outside of maybe another name or another player or two probably on the cheap here between now and the draft, right?
Yeah, that's typically where things slow down. You may get some movement right ahead of the draft. Miles Boykin had come back to Pittsburgh, you know, I think a week before the draft last year. And again, I think post-draft movement, you could actually see some decent activity there based on if this team does not acquire a slot corner and they want to bring back Sullivan or Peterson. Those things, I think, are possible. And of course, you talk about the compensatory period ending the Monday after the draft also kind of has that second smaller wave up for agency. So there'll be some more additions. We'll see if Hudson's one of them.
You think there'll be any notable ones at this point?
Define notable as in contractually above the veteran minimum?
Above the that magic $6 million over 2 years, $3 million average per year.
I'll put it this way. I think the biggest name to come back to Pittsburgh to be, you know, be signed by Pittsburgh from here until, you know, maybe camp, because maybe something comes up in camp, but would be bringing back Patrick Peterson. I don't think it'll be a bigger name in terms of just name notoriety than if they were to re-sign Peterson, say, the Monday after the draft.
Yeah. It feels for... feels for the most part, just looking around the league and what's available and all like that, it feels like the bulk of their heavy lifting is done at this point.
And in terms of what a Peterson contract would look like, you'd have to think it's a 1 year. I mean, we all know this is, if he does come back, it would be for just one more season unless they want to do 2 years for the cap purpose. But I think they try to do a 1 year, $3.5 million deal type of thing with Peterson.
Yeah, it wouldn't be much more than that, obviously, because of cap purposes and right. All. So, yeah, if they did do something like that, that's likely what it would look like.
You know, I have a question about, do you want to go down a rabbit hole right now or later? I'll make a dealer's choice. Do you want to just go down this 10-minute just nonsense rabbit hole now or in like a half hour?
Oh, I got nothing but time here, and I spent all day yesterday going down let me tell you.
Oh, God.
Let me fill in the listeners to my idle, useless work that I've been doing. You know, the NFL just released the, what are they technically call that, the performance-based pay benefit numbers and all like that. And obviously Dan Moore was in the top 25 once again, earning, I don't know, 740 something thousand and all like that. And a lot of people probably don't really understand what that is, but what, you know, it's basically a fund set aside by the management council, and it's all based off of, it's got a weird formula that is based off of playing time versus what you earn, and there's indexes that's created, and there's a lot of math that goes into this. And although I've known about this for several years now, I'm actually, this year I took it upon myself to try to reverse engineer this. And it's a huge undertaking, and it's a lot of math and spreadsheets and trying to figure out the rules associated with it. And I've done a pretty good job of reverse engineering it for the most part and understanding all the rules associated with it. And look, to recap here, you know, Dan Moore's obviously the big name because he was in the top 25 players in the NFL as far as the amount that he received this year. But any player that plays a single snap for any team, whether it be just one special team snap, qualifies to get some sort of pay out of this thing. And, you know, in the case for, like, you know, some of these Steeler players like Quadri Olison, who played six snaps for the Steelers, five on special teams last year. Even he, I think, qualified to get somewhere around $5,000.
Oh, wow. That's good money.
Yeah. Not bad at all there. But once again, I went down this rabbit hole and I spent way too much time yesterday about things that nobody but me, as far as Steeler fan base, probably cares about here, trying to reverse engineer this thing. And I've got it 98% of the puzzle filled in there. And the bad thing about it is, you know, off-season workout bonuses are also included in compensation for this. And you're never going to know how many players showed up at, you know, X amount, you know, for the per diem. I think it was $295 per day, but you can get fairly close on that. But that's what I've been doing. And a quick add-on to this is this performance-based pay that the league pays these players does not count against the salary cap. So the performance-based pay benefit is just a fun setup for the players. And I think they said that it's something like 12,305,000 per club.
Where does this money come from? Is this revenue sharing? Where does this pot get sourced from?
Oh man, you're gonna make me really start. I could read this off in the press release here, but we'll cover it at a later date. Okay. I don't have the memo set up here in front of me to go over what all it's come from, but anyway, that's how I spent most of my day. Let's see. No, that's not it. I thought maybe I had it up here, but I don't. But it's just another player benefit and all like that that's funded by the league.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I think I saw what Schefter tweeted that Aaron Rodgers got $81. So, I mean, that just, as you say, literally every player is able to get something from that. But, and this is just purely a playing time metric, because some people say, why does Stan Moore get so much money? He's a terrible tackle. This is from a playing time perspective only, correct?
Right. It's all based off snaps and percentage of total and salary. And each player has what's called a player index. And the way they even it out is even a minimum salary, say a rookie, you elevate his salary to the veteran minimum of a player with seven or more years to equal out the index. That way veteran players are not don't suffer demerit in the index. On once again, there's a lot of useless math here, and we have now used up 5 minutes, I think, of the podcast here of talking about something that really has no impact on the cap or anything like that. It's just one of the things that the league does that I've been trying to learn more about. To what I want to be able to do is present every year a rough figure of what each player earned, and see the league only releases the top 25 earners across the league. And I thought people might want to earn, instead of just looking at Dan Moore and 740,000, to know what each of these other players earn across the league. So that's my goal moving forward, is to try to get the math down on this, where every year when this report comes out, I can throw out, hey, this is what the other, whatever, 50, 60 players that had snaps last year also earned in relation to him. So now that I'm back out of my rabbit hole, what rabbit hole would you like to go down?
Well, let's table that one so we come up for air for a little bit, but I have a question on Najee Harris.
I apologize for all that as well,
No, please don't. But I do want to have a discussion about Najee Harris, the potential contract, what that looks like a little bit later in the show, but we'll kind of stick with the draft news for the moment here. Pittsburgh hosting four players for pre-draft visits on Tuesday, according to the team. The team may actually be disclosing now some of these names. This comes from Dale Lawley, who is one of the site writers, editors for Steelers.com. But the team hosting Florida State D-tackle Braden Fisk, Kentucky slot corner Andrew Phillips, Penn State slot corner Daquan Hardy, and Western Kentucky wide receiver Malachi Corley. We already knew that Fisk, Phillips, and Corley were going to come in for visits. Those had been reported prior to the announcement. We knew Corley was in town on Monday. Hardy is a new name to the list, although he is a local name. He's from Penn Hills, Pittsburgh, and so yeah, he will not count against that a lot at 30. He's played outside corner too, but profiles as a slot corner at the NFL level. So positions of need, Dave, D-tackle, D-line depth, slot corner, and wide receiver.
Yeah, everything's kind of lining up here, it seems like, especially when you mix in the pro day stuff and positional needs. So hopefully we can, as we talked on the show or the live stream the other night, it certainly would be nice to be able to build this pre-draft visitor list out completely with 30 outside non-local names and with whatever local kids get brought in on top of it. So it feels like we're making progress. I know another one surfaced last night on Instagram. Looks like it's coming in today, right?
That is Mason Smith from LSU. Carl Dunbar at that LSU Tigers pro day last week. So Smith coming in has that rare prototypical build for the position, 6'5", 306, 35-inch arms, and that's what Pittsburgh looks for essentially to a T at defensive end, to play 4-eye, to play 5-tech, play 3-tech, and those types of body types and frames are just difficult to find at the college level. Now Smith, he's underdeveloped and raw and tore his ACL in 2022. Production was light last year. He's got to be able to kind of play to his potential, his talent, but you know, in theory, you draft him in, say, the third round. He gets rotational snaps as a rookie, and then maybe hopefully can develop into a starter, replace, say, an Ogunjobi for 2025. That would be a loose outlook for Mason Smith. So not surprising to see him come in, given that Dunbar at that pro day, given the scheme fit, the need. The question will be, where do you draft him, and do you ultimately get him?
This is someone that we've had kind of highlighted as a potential candidate going back at least to the combine, I know. Maybe a little bit before then you were talking about him as well. So if you're a fan of this team and a listener, this is a guy that's got, you know, when you come to the Blues Clues aspect of it and measurables and pro day and power five and what this team needs and Dunbar at the pro day and in for a visit. I mean, that's a lot of boxes checked, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. And so the question, where is he likely to be drafted? Probably third round. You've got two third round picks, they're 84 and 98. That would be the most realistic place to take a Mason Smith.
Feels like him or Rook, right? Another guy that we talk about in potentially that third round hole. What would the odds be on one of those two guys being a Pittsburgh Steeler as we sit here right now?
I think decent odds. I would say Smith a better chance in the third round. I think a horror from Clemson is a bit more viewed as a second round, maybe early third round kind of a guy. Smith, because that production and the tape doesn't quite translate yet, at least, probably pushes him down a little bit.
All right. And we'll see if the Michigan kid comes in here.
And Chris Jenkins Jr., yeah, we'll see. I don't know for sure. To go back on Fisk, he, you know, highly productive at Florida State this past year, Western Michigan transfer. Lack of length, though, 31-inch arms, typically not the team's profile, but of course there's interest, the fact that they're bringing him in. They signed Dean Lowry, who's got 31-inch arms, so they can work on Lowry can teach Fisk some things, I'm sure. He's a potential viewed as a round two type of guy right now. Phillips played a bunch in the slot last year, has some size, physical, light on production, 10 pass deflections, no interceptions the last 2 years, some penalty issues as well with him. Hardy is a Sandra Still type size corner, really going to have to, you know, play primarily inside at the NFL level. Good ball skills, though, good leaping, good timing, good hands. Also can contribute on punt returns. And Corley is this Debo Samuel stocky yak type, maybe not a super athlete, but somebody that can do damage post-catch.
Hardy more of a day three guy, right?
Yeah, Hardy's going to be a day three type of guy. Phillips probably round three, day two type of guy. Corley, some have even speculated him late in the first round. That feels a touch strong given this really strong receiver class, but he should be day two, and Fisk will also be a day two candidate.
All right. That brings us up to date there, and probably right after we get out off this podcast, we'll probably have another set of three or four pre-draft sure. Visitors coming in. I don't know. Maybe they'll drop while we're on this show today.
Yeah, with Mason Smith coming in, typically they come in bunches, especially this time of year, because pre-draft visits will run up in about the first 2 weeks of April. They won't go the whole way until right before the draft, and so hopefully we'll hear a couple more names throughout this week and into next week as well. All right, Dave, let's talk about my mock draft. It went up on Tuesday, my third edition. I'll do obviously at least one more before the draft officially kicks off on April 25th. Mix this one up, some different names here than the previous versions. No Zach Frazier in this mock draft. It was in my first two in the second round. Instead, in the first round, I go with a center, and it's not Zach Frazier. It's not Jackson Powers Johnson. It's Graham Barton from Duke. We talked about some, I believe, on the Monday show, and worked out and had some great numbers at his pro day. Yes, he is a college tackle. He will have to kick inside, but he's been repping there at center throughout the pre-draft process. I know he'll get some Kendrick Green comparisons and groans, but Barton is bigger, longer, stronger, just better testing overall, really smart, more experienced, just overall to college level, playing offensive line. Remember, Green was a D tackle early in his Illinois career and made the switch to O-line a year or two in. So I get there is a level of projection there, but I think Barton has the tools and traits and smarts to play center.
We've had a lot of many kind of discussions about him throughout this process overall here. And you look at what he's put up at his pro day, and then if you throw from the great math bomb at his website that measures RAS and all like that, I think didn't he have him listed as a guard on there?
He did, yes.
On the default settings, and it allows you to go in there and adjust the positions if you want to see how they stack up over there. And if you do that, you run him as a center. it's 10, 10. I'm doing the 10 fingers, 10, 10. Incredible when you look at the RAS from that aspect there. This is one of the most interesting players when it comes to project. And really, I'd go in, you know, along the lines with the Fisk as well, too, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, on kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum there, you know, not the ideal measurements, but certainly had the production there at Florida State. And the tape's good as well, too. Man, the Graham Barton discussion, you know, once again, you know, you go back, and I've yet to do this, I hope do it by the end of the week, try to roll all the way back to it. But I don't know how valuable. Here's the thing, and the Duke Pro Day has already obviously happened. The full thing, I think, is going to be shown tomorrow on the ACC network. And also we'll get to see. Now we've seen clips of it. And I believe they even in some of the clips that are out there, you see him snapping the ball as part of some of the workout drills that they evidently had him do at that Duke Pro Day. So obviously there are teams that want to see that because of there's probably not going to be many teams that view him as a tackle, although he obviously played a lot of left tackle at Duke in his final several seasons there. How beneficial do you think his freshman center tape is at this point and all? And then how is the projection mixed into this thing? And do teams say, look, this guy is just an elite athlete, and even his left tackle tape what he put on tape is impressive enough. It doesn't matter what position he plays. We will figure it out after the fact. Now, if a team like the Steelers did draft him, you know, first, second round, you know, you obviously don't know how far he's going to fall, if he falls at all. The Steelers obviously would probably draft him with the notion of hoping that he could play center. Is there enough? Do we have enough on tape? And is that tape beneficial enough, being it happened so long ago, to help with that projection?
I mean, it helps that he has literally played there before as a freshman, started, I believe, 5 games after a couple of injuries hit the Duke depth chart. So it's not brand new to him, but I don't think you put a ton of stock into that tape because it was a long time ago. It's just a box you check of, okay, he has done it before. He's not completely unfamiliar. To me, what's most important is he's working as a center throughout the pre-draft process. So he's snapping all the time. He was snapping throughout that pro day. cycle. So he has the mentality of, I'm likely to play inside. I'm going to start working inside. Now, of course, you're not in games. You're not in pads. But it's just the mentality of preparing and thinking like a center as opposed to being a tackle, which he was throughout the bulk of his Duke career. So, again, there's a projection there. There's no question about that. But you look at the traits and the skill set and say, you know, can he fit there? And I think you have to look at, A, the intelligence. Is he smart enough to make line calls and pass protections and audibles and communicate? And I think he is. I think he's a smart guy. He's all academic multiple times at Duke, a good school overall. So I think if you can check that box and just given his other, you know, tools, he'll have the size to play inside. He's athletic. He's got, you know, nasty. He can finish. He's got good hand placement. Those things all translate over. So yes, there is a projection. There's no question about that. But I guess the calculation is there a short-term pain, quote-unquote, a little bit of an adjustment period for a long-term gain if you think he can be a solid center for the next, you know, 5, 7, 10 years?
And what's the worst case if he can't play? If you say, I mean, he can be a guard for you, right?
I mean, hopefully, if he can't play center, I guess the question is why he can't play center. Is it a snapping issue? Is it something else? And will he have an issue at guard as well? But yeah, I mean, he, you know, you could try to move him around in emergency tackle. I mean, it's not like he couldn't play tackle if he ever had to in some sort of circumstance, but you'd be drafting him with the intent. And when you draft somebody, you sit there and say, look, you hope for the best for this guy in the first round. And the best is he can become a quality center.
Let me roll back to, I think in a couple of podcasts ago, I stated that I thought that he worked at the Senior Bowl in doing some drills and all like that. I had him confused with somebody else there. He did not do anything at the Senior Bowl. I had him confused with somebody else. So he didn't do, you know, some sort of minor. What was the minor injury that he had?
I think it was a lower body injury. I have not been able to find exactly what it was, but unfortunately, I wish he would have been healthy to work out, because he probably would have been repping center at the Senior Bowl and he would have gotten some recent tape on him, but alas.
Right. Now, Arthur Smith, we know, was at that pro day. We also found yesterday Zach Crockett was there. Dan Rooney was there. It'd be interesting to see if we find anybody else there when the when they show it on the ACC network, I think tomorrow or the next day there. Obviously, with Khan and Mike Tallman not there, you would hope and expect if there is serious interest in him that he'd be brought in for a visit, right?
That would make sense. If there was a year to break that Tomlin Khan first round streak, it might be this one, considering that they were only at 4 pro days. But I would agree that if they broke that streak, it would have to be on somebody that also came in for a visit and came to the facility. We don't know if that's occurred with Barton. Again, our list is about halfway full right now of the known pre-draft visitors who are not the local candidates. So that would be my suspicion. I don't know if we'll get that answer, though, by the time the draft rolls around. Hopefully we do, but I just couldn't tell you.
Now, normally you're chalk with the Blues Clues and the Khan and the Khan and the Tomlin pro day and stuff like that. Why mix it up this time?
Well, I had to kind of mix it up to have a different name there. B, again, you know, if there is a year to break that streak, this is probably the year to argue it, because the only 4 pro days they attended were Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, and Michigan. And there's a relatively short list of potential candidates to come from those schools that would be on that, you know, sticking to the Blues Clues list. It's, of course, Marius Mims, a couple of corners, you know, maybe J.C. Latham from Alabama. And that's kind of it right now in terms of those candidates. So it's a shorter, usually we have a list of like 12, 13 names of possibilities. You kind of narrow that down into a good group of 5 of real solid, plausible options. This year, it may be, you know, just a couple of names. So again, if there is kind of a year to break that streak, I think this would be the year to do it.
I've kind of gone back and forth as far as thinking, is he underrated? I felt like at the beginning of this thing, felt like maybe he was a little bit underrated. And I think a week and a half ago, I asked you, is Graham Barton being overrated? Now, after the pro day and seeing working those RAS numbers as a center and all like that, he might just be properly rated, mm-hmm. You know,
right.
You know, he's got enough tape. And he's young too. And he's like 20, 21.
Is he that young? I actually didn't check his age on that. Let's see how old he is. 21. He'll be 22 in June. So about average by the time he plays a regular season game.
All right. So once again, if you know, I understand why you went this way to kind of bust it up. Boy, it'd be easy to slam dunk him in that spot if Khan and Tomlin were at that pro day.
Oh, sure.
For sure. But we'll see if he's brought in for a visit. You have to think that if they like him, he will be.
Right. Now, some people ask, why not put Powers Johnson there? And that's certainly still possible. And if you're breaking the rule for Barton, you can break the rule for Powers Johnson. That's not why I excluded him on that list there. But I think Barton's a better athlete and better mover. And in this wide zone system, Powers Johnson might not be the ideal scheme fit there. Now, would I be shocked if he was the pick? No, he's still regarded as maybe the top overall center in this class. And Pat Meyer at that pro day. So there are some connections there. But I just want to note why I ended up going with Barton over a Powers Johnson.
Okay. All right. I wanted to kind of get an elongated conversation of Graham Barton out of the way there, because we've sort of had many ones with him up until this point. All right. Round two.
Round two is Ricky Pearsall, the wide receiver from Florida. Guy that was brought in for a pre-draft visit. We know Pittsburgh seems destined to target receivers somewhere on day two. And so Pearsall makes sense here. He's got a little bit of size, a little lanky, but he's tall, athletic, good production, good hands overall, willing blocker. Again, coming in for the pre-draft visit, just checking those boxes across the board.
Yeah, this could be one of four or five probably wide receivers to go in that spot, right?
Yeah, really hard to predict. They've shown interest in a bunch of day two guys, Corley, Leggett, you can throw Roman Wilson from Michigan in there as well. So it's hard to really pinpoint one name, but Pearsall, as good as any you could mention in this spot.
I agree.
All right, in round three, a name we mentioned earlier who came in for his visit officially yesterday is Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. He's got size, he's physical, slot corner experience, seems likely to be a day two kind of guy. The weaker production is a concern there. I know some Kentucky fans weren't thrilled with his play overall. Too many penalties, not enough splash plays. Again, these are my thoughts on what the team will do, not necessarily what I would do if I was running the team. But slot corner, there's nothing there right now. Do you want to go back and re-sign Sullivan Peterson? You could, but those are still short-term band-aids. Phillips can hopefully become a long-term option that can ideally be a true three-down slot corner as opposed to these committee rundown, pass-down slots Pittsburgh has been using post Mike Hilton.
Obviously some interest there. Brought him in for a pre-draft visit as well too. So easy dot connect for you there, as is your next pick,
which is Mason Smith, who is in Pittsburgh currently, it appears, for a pre-draft visit. And so this was made before we even knew that, but we knew that Dunbar was at that LSU pro day. Again, the size, the ability for him to hopefully kind of rotate and not have to play immediate starting snaps, fingers crossed, as a rookie, barring injuries, and then can hopefully develop and grow and become a starter by 2025. But again, you just won't find the body type like Smith, a 6'5", 306, 35-inch arms, LSU pedigree program. That is, from a framework perspective, what Pittsburgh looks for to a T.
Absolutely. So I definitely understand that one. And I understand the pick that you have in the fourth round as well, too, for obvious reasons.
Which is Cedric Gray, the off-ball linebacker from North Carolina, given Aaron Curry's pro day activity at three pro days, including North Carolina, for Gray. This one makes sense. He's got a bit of size. What I thought there was the splash play production. You saw Pittsburgh really revamp, retool their inside linebacker room last year, and they were searching for splash plays that Miles Jack and Devin Bush and Robert Spillane didn't offer 2 years ago. And you were getting that from Holcomb, from Roberts, from Alexander, and Gray has that on his resume too. The last 2 years, he's got 6 sacks, 10 pass breakups, 5 forced fumbles, 3 interceptions, got a bunch of tackles as well. So again, would I take inside linebacker this early? I probably wouldn't. Not having an offensive tackle here is hurting me inside, but just given based on the tea leaves of Curry's activity, I have Gray. Now, if they were to go sign Khalik Hudson, this may change things, but until they added somebody into the mix, we'll go with an off-ball linebacker in our drafts.
He was an all-star kid. All-star game kid, right? Because that's another aspect that we always roll back to is if these kids, and there weren't many underclassmen this year, period, that underclassmen list this year was shorter finally. Was Gray, which All-Star game was Gray at?
Senior Bowl.
Okay.
Yeah. So Senior Bowl guys, so got to watch him down at Mobile. You know, some people could say it's just a little bit late for him. I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but it's not a great off-ball linebacker class. Probably no one taken in the first round. And I think guys like Edgerrin Cooper from A&M, of course, Peyton Wilson from NC State, Jeremiah Charter Jr., Junior Colson will probably get drafted ahead of Gray. And so for him to fall, you know, into that outside top 100, I think is realistic.
All right. Where you probably received the most pushback out of all of this, other than Barton and his inexperience at center, I'm guessing would be you waiting until round six to get a tackle.
It was, and I'll push back on myself for it. I don't love that strategy and plan. I have expressed that desire as much as anybody to move Broderick Jones over from right tackle or left tackle, but you can't get everything that you want here, and there are so many needs for this team that something has to give. I wrote about that this morning, that we're going to come out of this draft, Dave, wondering about some position. I don't know what it's going to be, whether it's going to be wide receiver, center, tackle, D-line, slot corner, outside corner, but there's going to be something that feels a bit still empty and still work to be done, because there are easily 6-7, what I would still call needs for this team, and 4 picks in the top 2 rounds. And so you do the math there, something has got to give. In this case, it is tackle. We wait until the 6th round to get a tackle, and Travis Glover from Georgia State, who I think is really going to be a guard at the NFL level. He played tackle, also played some guard in college, but Pittsburgh has shown a ton of interest in him. He's not a true small schooler. He's a FBS guy, but he's, you know, group of 5 player. And for Pittsburgh to coach him at the Senior Bowl, for Isaac Williams to attend a Georgia State Pro Day, for him to come in for a pre-draft visit, has a lot of smoke around a smaller school candidate. He's got size, he's got length. He can run block. He would put him inside a guard to kind of hide the lack of elite lateral quickness that he has. That'd be the plan, I think, with Travis Glover.
Was he considered by many a combine snub?
I think he was. I think he was considered one of the more notable names to not receive an invite.
All right. We've seen, obviously, the Steelers go after a snub before, in most recently, I think, Kevin Dotson, right?
Yeah, Dotson was the first non-combine player drafted, I believe, in 2020.
All right. Was there any other tackle that maybe you considered in this spot?
I mean, there are names you can mention, but I think Glover is the one who has the most obvious smoke. So this mock isn't super creative. It's kind of just checking some of the boxes, and we'll see how the last one looks. But when Pittsburgh shows that level of interest in a smaller school guy like Glover, usually means they really want to take a look at this kid.
All right. That leaves us with your last pick, another corner.
Another corner, although this time an outside corner in DeAndre Prince from Ole Miss, who's on the lankier side, but ran 4.38. He's got decent production overall. And so double dipping a corner, I think, makes sense with, you know, thin and unknown depth behind Dante Jackson and Joey Porter Jr. to compete with Darius Rush, with Corey Trace Jr. and whoever else is in that mix, Barku, Barnes, etc. So I think double dipping a corner makes sense. But again, this is more outside guy as opposed to Phillips, who's going to be more slot guy at the NFL level.
All right. We've done these for years now. Immediately when you push publish, you have mocker's remorse. What was your mocker's remorse on this one?
I think obviously waiting on a tackle is not my preference, but here's the argument I would make, just to play devil's advocate and say why they shouldn't draft a tackle early. It's part of my terrible take today, if you want to hear more expanded thoughts. But I mean, you have nothing at center right now, essentially. Is that a fair assessment?
That's very fair.
And nothing really at receiver, starter, opposite Pickens?
Yeah. In fact, the PFF, we won't talk about, I mean, we don't have time to talk about it, but PFF, I think, deemed it as one of the worst wide receiver rooms currently in the NFL right now in its current status, right?
Bottom 5 is what they were saying. Right. And then slot corner, again, they could bring somebody back, but as things stand currently, nothing at slot corner, correct?
Yeah, it's not looking great right at this moment.
Right. So nothing at center, receiver, slot corner. At least you have something at tackle. You could bring back your 2 starters from last year, and there are known commodities there in Dan Moore Jr. on the left side, who they like more than fans like, and they have Broderick Jones on the right side. So at least there's something there. There's nothing at the other positions that we just rattled off. And so if you had to then logically make a decision somewhere. Again, they're going to have to make a decision somewhere. Unless they're going to trade down and acquire more capital, they can't, they're not going to be able to fill all their needs with top round picks, because they just, they have too many needs and not enough draft capital right now. So if there's a place to make that tough call, it would be, I think, a tackle, because you need something at receiver, you need something at center, you need something at slot corner. You can live and survive with what you have at tackle. Now, is that ideal, living and surviving? No, but you're going to have to make a decision at some position.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, overall, I understand what, you know, obviously a lot of dot connecting in here, and based off of need and all that kind of stuff. So I applaud the effort here.
All right. I think people generally liked it. I'm pretty happy with it, but we'll have certainly one more, not our final version, and hopefully some more visits come in, and that will, I think, paint a better picture for us in terms of what this team is likely to do.
All right.
All right, Dave, where are we at right now? Let's go back to, let's kind of stick with some draft talk here, and not earth-shattering news, but based on the free agency moves, and you've done some kind of more quantifiable research on this. Pittsburgh, once again, unlikely to receive a comp pick in 2025.
Yeah, it feels like it would be a minor miracle almost at this point. When you look at the balance sheets that Nick Corte does over at Over the Cap, nobody does that formula better as far as a balance sheet goes. And although he hasn't updated it yet, since several of these signings on the Steelers side of the ledger have taken place, we already know as of this morning that probably the Cordarrelle Patterson signing might end up even as a CFA gain for the Steelers on that side of the ledger. Now that contract's in, the one signed by Watkins probably won't be, because that's a veteran benefit contract. The same with Kyle Allen, that won't be considered an ad. Waiting for the, I know the cap number on Dean Lowry, just don't know really the specifics. I'll have that by the end of the day on him. Maybe that even does enough to qualify as a CFA gain. As far as CFA compensatory free agents lost so far this season, Armand Watts, he qualifies, but he balances, he is canceled out by the Steelers signing Cameron Johnston there. The other, Mason Rudolph, obviously was lost, but his contract's not going to qualify as a loss. So it would take the Steelers for what remaining unsigned free agents of their own out there, none of those guys look like they're going to be marketable whatsoever, to get much more than a minimum veteran benefit contract at this point. And then you also got to remember that the Steelers have Patrick Queen on the board as a gain, Deshaun Elliott on the board as a gain as well, too. It's really not looking like this team's going to get any compensatory draft picks for 2025.
Right, which, as you point out, is pretty standard and typical, with Pittsburgh being more aggressive in free agency in recent years. It would have to be maybe if it was a coaching, kind of the minority, you know, coaching loss compensation program the NFL has. But yeah, I'm not sure what could happen there for next year. So, I think we all kind of understand that that's where this thing's headed based on Pittsburgh's activity and not having any marquee free agent losses. But still important to, I think, note and really kind of put into context by you.
Right. And we will follow it, obviously, the rest of the way. And the compensatory free agent signing period that counts towards this ends the, I think, 4 o'clock, the Monday after the draft. We'll monitor it and obviously update after that fact. But it would be surprising if the outlook changes at this point.
I know the contract information is in for the Steelers free agents and Quez Watkins, Kyle Allen, Patterson, as you mentioned, et cetera. Give us an update on those contracts and overall cap update on where Pittsburgh stands.
The Patterson contract came in exactly at the cap number that I thought it would be. It was structured just a tad bit different. I thought maybe he would get a $2 million signing bonus. And instead, he got a little bit less than, I think, a $1.9 million signing bonus. So forgive my bad projection there, although his cap number still worked out to be the same, because in lieu of giving him that extra little bit of money, let's see, he got $1.9 million signing bonus and base salaries in 2024 and 2025 of 1.3 and 2.8, results in his cap charge being $2.25 million this year and $3.75 million next year. So that contract's in. The contract signed by Quez Watkins and Kyle Allen. Veteran benefit contracts as expected. And the Dean Lowry one is, we're waiting for more specifics, as far as, you know, exact, base salary and signing bonus, structure there. But, we know what the cap number is on that at this point. And it was, lost my sheet here, but it's well under 3 million.
Okay. And so where Pittsburgh stands overall, I actually have a pretty good ballpark projection, even though we're still waiting on that Lowry details.
Oh, I've got the exact number where they're at, cap wise. And right now, this matches what the NFLPA says after these four signings, 12.195998 million under the cap as we sit here today. Once again, the mandatory workout bonus placeholder charge of $907,200 has not been put in place yet. We'll wait and see when that happens. But in real time right now, almost $12.2 million under the cap as we sit here right now today. So barring anything substantial happening as far as, you know, trading for somebody with a high cap number or something along those lines, it does. They've got plenty of room to work with here in the short term, before you'll obviously get into some more of these forthcoming post draft costs, you know, like affording the offset of the rookie pool. And, you know, that's only going to be around $3.8 million. The workout bonus placeholder charge I just mentioned of nearly $1 million.
Interrupt you for just one second. And it's not hyper for Pittsburgh, but it caught my attention. Stephon Diggs from the Bills is being traded to the Houston Texans for draft pick compensation per Adam Schefter. So Diggs, you know, when I saw it come up as Diggs, I went, oh my God, did Pittsburgh just make an insane move? Because I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. You know, theoretically, I know there was dead money and age and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Stephon Diggs, he always seemed unhappy in Buffalo and now officially out going to Houston.
Wow, Stroud's got him another nice weapon over there. They've got some weapons over there. You do kind of wonder about his attitude. Is it going to, you know, that probably got him out of there, out of Buffalo. So good player. Yeah, it'd be interesting to. That's big news on this Wednesday.
That Texans team is stacked. Talk about contenders in the AFC. Mm-hmm. Teams that are going to emerge. Their defense, they had a bunch of upgrades. Their offense has gotten better. Stroud in year two. They had no run game last year. They can run the ball even half decently. I mean, watch out for Houston, man.
Hey, man, you know, when you get a quarter, when you seemingly look like you hit on a franchise quarterback early on in his career, and you've got the low salary to work with, you got to try to build around it as fast as you can to try to take advantage of that. And they're doing just that. They've got to be the favorites in the South right now, easily.
Yeah, the question is, can they become favorites in the AFC as a whole? They probably won't get quite to that point, but they're going to be right in that mix. So for Pittsburgh, another team to reckon with in the overall playoff picture, even though there won't be, you know, direct competition between the AFC South likely favorites and Steelers as an AFC North competitor. But point being, another top team to try to deal with if Pittsburgh gets into the playoff race. And who knows, maybe they're playing the Texans in the playoffs at some point this year.
Yeah, that'd be a good problem to be there to have for sure there. Rest of the cap situation here. Look, a lot of this, I don't think you're going to see a restructure happen, you know, until, you know, say Alex Highsmith, until later in the offseason. We're obviously still watching to see when and if anything gets done with Cameron Hayward and his contract. So that's another thing to watch there. But as we said earlier in the show here too, feels like this team's about done as far as significant adds in free agency. You know, I would not bet my house on that, but just the way the tea leaves and what's out there, you know, barring this team, you know, this Brandon Ayuk thing coming back to life, or not that it even had life to begin with, but if more smoke comes around that, you know, as far as anything substantial at this point, it does feel like the Steelers are done.
Yeah, again, we'll see. As you like to say, let's take a step back once the draft is complete, and even probably the next couple of days after that, to see who may come back in that post-compensatory period. But yeah, I think just based on, you know, the free agents available or lack thereof, there are no major moves coming. Could there be something, a Hudson, somebody equivalent at his position or something else? Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. I think they will sign somebody before the draft kicks off, but the major moves appear to be over.
They do.
Dave, I wanted to send you down rabbit hole part two today about Najee Harris. I know we've discussed Harris in the past, and the fifth year option is now due in less than 1 month by May 2nd. I think what we both expect it to be accepted, but you've always mentioned the idea of a contract extension, and we've talked about that and the plausibility of that in principle. My question is, what would be the actual contract terms of a Najee Harris deal long-term? I discussed this in an article yesterday and had some commenters kind of go back and forth about it. I think he would get at least $10 million per year looking at the landscape of the running back position right now. Saquon Barkley, and this is kind of where it stemmed from. Barkley was on the New Heights podcast talking about, you know, he got paid this year from Philadelphia, and he wants to now see, you know, Najee, and when their time comes due, Bijan Robinson and Gibbs in Detroit, want them to get paid too and lift up the market from the running back position overall. What is a fair market value, do you think, for Harris? I was getting pushback when people were saying that $10 million was too strong. Is that a fair number? Am I too high on that average yearly value for Najee Harris?
Well, let's first look. He is scheduled to earn a base salary in 2024 of $2.439, a little bit more than $2.439 million. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you take that and you add it to what his fifth year option amount is set to be, which is $6.79 million. So what does that give you as a max 2 year total he can earn as is?
You said 6.79 and
6.79 plus $2.44 million.
That gets you at 9.23.
All right, so already you have a kind of a built-in ceiling sort of on him of that's what he can earn over the next 2 years. And you're going to try to use that as much of a negotiating aspect that you can. Now you look at the running back contracts average per year currently in the NFL. To get him into the top 10 would take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It would take him at least getting the $7.25 million dollar number, which feels a little low, especially if you're saying that you're going to pick up his, you know, fifth year option and that he's worth at least that. If you did get him to the $10 million range, he would top a guy like Joe Mixon, who is now, I believe, at $9.875 million. The next bump up up the ladder would be the $12 million range, where both Nick Chubb and Josh Jacobs both reside. So a top, put getting him at an average yearly value of $10 million is plausible, it feels like. It would put him third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh in the league in running backs, which also seems plausible and, you know, at least make him feel happier than he is. So your question, your question is a 10 million average per year fair, plausible, and doable, right?
It is. And I think it is to answer that question.
It is. It is. And you could do so with the idea, because his cap number right now is set to be 2.4. I mean, you could get this done with an APY of 10 million in his cap charge, probably not move much, if at all.
Yeah, especially relative to your option.
Are you doing what are you going to do with him? A 2-year extent? Are you going to?
I was thinking like three, because I think Barkley got what, 3 years, 37. I was thinking just rough terms, 3 years, 30 on Harris.
All right. So how many new, are you doing this after you pick up the fifth year option? Or are you doing, I hate to get into some semantics here.
I mean, it would be after the fifth year option. I don't know would it still apply though for 2024 in terms of ripping up the
I mean you're changing all aspects of the 2024 cap number if you do something like this. So in other words, what you're saying is you pick up the fifth year option, so technically that 2025 slot gets filled in, so you want to do maybe two more years on top of that. So in other words, the technical contract would be 2024 through 2027 is what you're looking at here.
I hadn't considered to that. I mean, it would be or through 26 as the 24 be year one of the new deal, 25, 26 in terms of the 3-year new deal.
Well, once again, you're getting at semantics here, because once you get into the 2024 fifth year option being picked up, technically the new cash year would be designated 2026. All of that's just semantics.
Yeah.
The long and short of this is, no matter how you do it, even if you want to do a 2-year extension, 3-year extension, and assuming you want at least a average per year. A true new money average of $10 million. Yes, it's doable on all aspects there.
Because my thought was, and I think I'd written about this or commented about it, was he's not going to get less than Joe Mixon got from Houston. And Mixon is older. His productivity has slowed a bit. And he's at 9.875, Mixon is. And there's a really kind of sweet spot, because you got Chubb and Jacobs, and Jacobs just got signed this past offseason, or this offseason, I should say, at $12 million. So you got some leeway, I think, to put Harris in between Jacobs and Chubb and Mixon, to me, is kind of the sweet spot for where his deal could fall.
And here's the thing, too, because of the position and because of his age and because of the amount of work he's already gotten in the NFL and all like that, this is probably going to be, I mean, you never say never. This is the last good bite. This will probably be the one and only good bite of the apple that Najee Harris gets, right?
Sure. You certainly can't bank on that happening again, just based on the shelf life of a typical NFL running back.
Right. So he's got to get what he can get within reason. Obviously, you don't expect him to come out of this or do you expect him to come out of this as a top three paid running back in the league, which he would have to hit the $14 million mark for that to happen. That feels rich.
Sure. I don't think he won't get more than what Barkley got, would be my suspicion. The other thought I had, just kind of thinking this out, and maybe I'm missing a name, and if I am, I apologize, and you can correct me, Dave, but was the last time Pittsburgh did a long-term deal with a running back in terms of an extension, Willie Parker in 2006? Am I missing somebody here? They didn't do it with James Conner. They tried with Bell, but ultimately it did not work. Mendenhall did not get an extension.
Right.
I think my research was pointing me to Willie Parker, the 4-year deal he signed in 2006, being the last extension Pittsburgh had given a running back.
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't have all my paperwork in front of me, but it, that does sound right.
Excluding, you know, D'Angelo Williams is an outside free agent, and other minor deals given to running backs that may have occurred along the way, Molde Moore, whoever else may have been out there. But yeah, that was a 4-year, $16 million deal. Now, does that mean anything? No, not really, but it's interesting because it has been forever. Times have changed dramatically, and Mike Tomlin was the Steelers coach last time a running back in Pittsburgh got an extension, if it was indeed Parker, the last one to do it. So interesting, because we always talk about, you know, how receivers typically don't get second contracts in Pittsburgh, but in Pittsburgh, running backs do not receive second contracts.
Here's something else to add on to that conversation here. On top of it, did you just see where the Philadelphia Eagles signed one of their guys that was scheduled, that restricted free agent?
Yeah, Reed Blankenship.
Right. My buddy, who I talked about recently, Daniel Salib, just talked to me to alert me that had happened with him. You know, obviously, different rules for undrafted free agents versus drafted guys, when you can extend those guys, how many years they have to be in the league and all like that. And long story short, you know, Jaylen Warren is eligible for an extension this offseason if they wanted to do that. And he has here, he thinks that there's a distinct possibility that you could see Jaylen Warren sign some sort of an extension similar to what that, even though they played different positions, what the Eagles kid got there. So if you did that and you increased a byproduct, obviously it would be a economical deal overall, would put more money in Jaylen Warren's pocket, but in essence, you would probably raise his average yearly value greater than that of Najee Harris's. So you're not going to extend him and Najee be happy with it. Agreed. So if you do one, you're probably going to have to do both.
What would that deal look like for Warren, do you think? Just as a framework, ballpark, I'm curious. Is this like sort of like Villanueva? I know he's exclusive rights, and it's not.
What was that kid's name? Reed what?
Reed Blankenship. It was a one-year deal. I was glancing at details, but maybe I missed the deal. But wasn't it just a one-year extension? Or
it was a weird the way it was done overall. Let me see if I can find the details of that one up here.
Yeah, it looks like one-year extension, but extension pays him a fully guaranteed $3.935 million over the next 2 years. So I guess it's extended out the contract 1 year, and he's getting new money for both years. A bunch of escalators involved as well, which I know Pittsburgh typically stays away from, but putting that part aside.
Yeah, they kind of had him by the short and curlies, if you will, in doing this with him. When you look at the details, I'm trying to find the exact details here.
Yeah, they announced it as a one-year extension through 2025, but I think it's new money, you know, for 2024, because he was part of the PPE program and he's going to get a bunch of money. I think they turned around. I think he gets that maybe still regardless, but Philadelphia still gave him a new deal.
All right. I'm struggling trying to find the details here real quick. Let's see. Extension is fully guaranteed $3.935 million over the next 2 years, another $1.375 million via playtime and Pro Bowl escalators there. So, you know, that's obviously something the Steelers would not do in regard to war. Long story short, can you people always say that that's my go-to phrase now, long story short. I guess it is, but can you do something with Jaylen Warren, a modest deal to put more money in his pocket and lock him up a little bit longer? Absolutely, you can, and to prevent him from becoming a restricted free agent next offseason. You know, what you do is you just tack on what he's scheduled to make this year, what the expected restricted tender is next year. You increase it by a little bit. You know, he gets the money now as opposed to later. Some security there. You know, you add on a couple of years to the deal, getting locked up that way. So, but once again, if you do something like that, you're doing so with the notion that you're not only going to do something with him, you're probably going to do something even more extravagant with Najee Harris.
And would you do Harris first if you feel like you do Warren first and Harris is a little happy?
Well, I mean, you'd probably do it under the assumption. You're probably talking to both of them right now,
okay.
quite honestly. For cosmetic and appearance reasons, yeah, you could probably do Najee first, you know, that kind of thing, just to make sure no feelings are hurt or anything along those lines there. But here's the other aspect that we've talked about, the cash spending in this team and how it feels like it's behind schedule overall when it comes to long term. If they're not going to spend that money in free agency, then, and we already have earmarked money for Pat Freiermuth, it wouldn't make sense to spend some of that extra cash on guys like Najee and Jaylen Warren. And look, because of Najee Harris's age and all like that, you know, it would be smart to, if you look at him being your running back past, you know, this year and maybe next year, then go ahead and start a meter on him.
Yeah. So again, I think fifth year option is the first thing first, which we assume will be picked up, and we'll get that assurance or not by May 2nd. And I think go from there.
Look, Najee already is probably going to be unhappy playing for that 2.4 mil, whatever we said that number is this year.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think so.
You know, so, you know, when you look at probability wise at this point of the offseason, especially knowing what this team has spent on cash in free agency or what they haven't spent on cash in free agency, and you look at the whole dynamics of the running back market, where it sits right now and where he sits in relation to it and him being able to stay on the field and him looking at all these numbers and having Barkley say, "Man, I hope you get yours." And I think from a probability factor, from where we were coming out of the, from once the Super Bowl ended to where we are right now, I'd say the probability has probably increased of that happening.
Okay. Yeah, that is fair enough. Some news coming in as well, although it's nothing really we don't already know. But four visitors coming in for Pittsburgh today. Two are local. The two others are Mason Smith, and so that is now confirmed. Taj Washington, which also was reported yesterday, he's the USC wide receiver. And then two local Pitt guys in Matt Goncalves, the tackle guard, and MJ Devonshire, the corner from Aliquippa. But the two Pitt guys are local, do not count against Pittsburgh's 30 visits, and we already knew about Smith and Washington.
All right, what's the 411 on Taj?
I didn't do the report on him. I can pull it up. He's a little undersized, but I think he's kind of physical and can do some return type stuff, I believe, and just kind of a tougher guy that may not necessarily wow with the athleticism. I'll pull up the scouting report that we wrote back in March. See if the weigh-ins are correct on this, but a little undersized overall. Not dramatically great testing, but in the scouting report, we noted reliable hands, catches well in traffic, good blocker, does have experience as a kick returner, needs to improve his separation. The game speed, it's not ideal, turns 23 in May. Was at Memphis and then went to USC this past year, where he caught 59 passes for over 1,000 yards, 18 yards per catch, which is impressive, and 8 touchdowns.
And Mark was at his pro day, right?
Yes, Mark Sadowski was at that USC pro day. Let me get some numbers on Washington at the combine just to confirm those, if I can pull them up here. Yeah, 5096, 174 is what he weighed in at. Did not run, 35-inch vertical, 10.2 in the broad. Not sure what he ran if he did at his USC pro day. So it's a smaller type, you know, with profile typically more as a slot type. I don't know if Pittsburgh has an urgent need for that right now, but of course he's being brought in for a visit.
All right, so we able to shoehorn those visitors in before this show finished.
Yep. All right, Dave, anything else to talk about, or do you want to get to some reader emails and close out today's show?
All right, you done sending me down the rabbit holes?
For now, wait until Friday. We'll find something else to send you down.
All right, let's read one here from Jason Michael. Writes in O-line scenarios. David Ox, operating under the assumption that all the potential week one starter prospects at center and right tackle are off the board by pick 51, which would you rather see for this season? A, Dan Moore Jr. at left tackle, Broderick Jones at right tackle, and one of the top rookie centers. Or Broderick Jones at left tackle, a top rookie right tackle, and either Nate Herbig or a re-signed Mason Cole at center.
Yeah, again, that's a conundrum I went to and kind of what I spoke about earlier. Even though I have that desire and want to move Jones over, you know, you have to understand, you know, you really, at least you have something there at tackle and you have nothing at center right now. So I guess with those two choices, yeah, give me the rookie center. The question is there a way that you could do both? And you could do both. You could draft a tackle in the first round and make an aggressive move, maybe trade up or hope a center falls in round two. Will that happen? I have no idea. But there are multiple options, but I understand the point of the question is just the exercise of a would you rather, which may play out on draft day.
Yeah. I would be with you with the A option as well too, to get the center. Todd Gensler, I would like your opinion on quarterback development or assessment in the Steelers room this year. We have all heard that is important to find out what we have in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields for the 2024 season, since both are essentially 1 year deals. My concern is for the last few years, we had a quarterback room consisting of Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky. Every week, it seems like the Steelers trotted out either Trubisky or Pickett, and yet Rudolph was probably the best one in the room. How are we going to find out in training camp and as the season progresses who is the best option moving forward? They seem to have missed the mark with the room the last couple of years, keeping Rudolph on the bench. Just a thought I had, but whether they can figure out who will be the best option in the future. So, you know, I don't know if we had the answers to that. It's just, I mean, you know, Russell Wilson's going to be in the pole position. Justin Fields will be given opportunities at times to show what he has. And you let this thing play out, obviously, through training camp and the preseason. And you can't be afraid to put whoever does start the season on the bench yank them if things don't get off to a good start.
Yeah, I mean, really.
It's a Captain Obvious reply there by me, but.
What else is there to say? I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you have to let the season play out and see where it takes you, and it'll direct your path. And if Wilson is the starter and earns the job and goes out and has a great year, then there's an answer for you right there. And yeah, you may wonder what Justin Fields is or is not, but if Wilson's playing great, then it's a good problem to have. Go extend out Wilson and keep him around. If he struggles and you yank him, then Fields gets a chance to play and you can see what he can do. So it's really just the process of the season, and you never know where the year will take you. One injury can change things, one bad game. You never, just, you know, based on how last year went, no one would have predicted how that thing was going to go in the fall, even after the great summer that Pickett and this offense had, and the season goes topsy-turvy. So the season will, I think, provide plenty of opportunities for answers.
All right, let's see. Cameron Andrews writes in, hey, fellas, can you explain what goes on during pre-draft visit? Is it medical checks, workouts, interviews, or all the above? Tenfold hat time. Let's say we are able to draft a right tackle and a defensive lineman. Would you look to trade Moore or Liao or both of them? He says I would look to trade Liao over Moore. I would keep Moore into the season because you never know about injuries and the development of the rookie. Thanks, guys, for all you do. I mean, I wish I could tell you everything that happened in a pre-draft visit. I mean, I think you've got the gist of it. And, you know, Cameron, you know, you want to get to know these guys. You bring them in groups probably to see how they get along. You obviously probably want to put a couple of them on the board. You just want to go more in depth and find out more about them. I guess if you have medical concerns at that time, you know, are you allowed to do medical rechecks during that kind of thing?
It's a good question. I don't know. I know that Caleb Williams is doing medical at facilities. That's why he declined to do anything medical at the combine. The combine officially has medical rechecks around this time of year, maybe in a week or so, where guys that were flagged or guys that were rehabbing, recovering from injuries will go back to Indy for rechecks around this time of year for a kind of a checkup and follow-up. So it's probably less of a need to do medical. Now, there was somebody that didn't come in for the combine, a Travis Glover, for example. You probably do. I think you're probably allowed to do medical in general, because non-combine guys will come in like a Glover and get worked up that way. So it's not really Pittsburgh. Teams can hold private workouts. They do that. Pittsburgh does not. They don't hold private, you know, actual on-field workouts with prospects. So it's mainly, as you said, Dave, a get to know you, come in, meet your positional coach, get on the board, meet maybe the strength and conditioning coach. Just kind of take a tour of the facility and have conversations, probably, you know, meet with Tomlin and, you know, whoever's there that day. But certainly your positional coach, get on the board a little bit, watch some tape and just kind of have a conversation.
Hearts and smarts testing.
Exactly. 100%.
Would you look to trade Moore or Liao or both of them? It would take a lot for me to trade Moore. I'd really have to be. And once again, you're looking at probably towards the end of training camp, depending on how comfortable you are with the rest of your roster and all like that. If you want to think about probability wise, I could see Liao being traded more so than I can Moore as we sit here today. Neither one of those guys are probably going to bring you a ton. Moore would probably bring you more because of the tackle tax and the fact that he has played and, you know, people know more what they're getting at that point, albeit not great. If either of those two were to be traded, I would be less surprised if it was Liao.
Yeah, same here. But Liao would be in literal Kendrick Green territory of get whatever you can get for him late, you know, 2026 conditional. I mean, it's not going to move the needle much. It's just we're going to cut this guy. And somebody want to take a flyer on him so we can try to theoretically get something for him. OK, let's do that. But that's more likely. If Moore were to get dealt, you know, you have to draft a tackle. If Dylan Cook has a great summer, that's when those conversations will come up. But that's a down the road conversation.
Let's see if I can get one from a name I don't recognize here. Nate Weems writes in, "Hey, Big Nate from Harrisburg. Have wondered this often when you speak about option to restructure the contract of TJs and others at any time. You talk about the Steelers going into the season, leaving salary cap room available for in-season free agents, practice squad, etc. Why wouldn't the team spend as necessary up to the cap and then restructure a player's contract in season if necessary to get cap room? Doesn't seem to make sense to restructure a contract in advance to free up money you might not use. Hope this makes sense." Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You see some teams around the NFL take that, go that route, that they'll wait until they actually need the cap space to do it. The Steelers just have I don't know why that would be a great question for Omar Khan to have to answer. Why do you restructure in the offseason and choose not to do it in season? And remember once again that even if you restructure a guy right before the season starts, you're obviously doing this for budget as well too, you know. That's why. And then you want to make sure you're not restructuring these guys too early and then they get hurt and serious knee injury and that kind of thing when it comes to it. And, you know, any leftover cap space that you do have can be carried over as well. So my best answer is that's just the way the Steelers do business when it comes to restructures.
Yeah, that's really mine as well. Pittsburgh doesn't do contract stuff in season. I know restructures necessarily aren't as complicated or as intense as an actual in-season new contract, but I think Pittsburgh's focus is once the season begins, we are focused solely on football. We have plenty of time in the offseason to handle restructures and take care of our business that way. And once we're in season, as opposed to adding more work to do with restructures and determining cap and balancing things from there, let's do it in the offseason. Things are a bit calmer and quieter, generally speaking, and put the focus on helping the team win in the fall.
All right, Lane writes in, "Hey, guys, thanks for all the hard work y'all are putting in. It's a busy time of year for you guys. What should we do about the receiver room? Let's assume the Steelers pick a receiver in Malachi Corley or Xavier Leggett or Ricky Pearsall to be the number two wide receiver. And let's just say that the selection turns out to be a quality player. We still need a third receiver, and I don't think relying on Van Jefferson, Quez Watkins, Calvin Austin is ideal. I would think we need to sign someone in free agency, but I guess I thought they would have done that by now. Just curious what your thoughts are." Yeah, Lane, look, I mean, if you want to look at holes on this roster right now, even moving past the additions of Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins and what remains carried over in say a guy like Calvin Austin. It is a little underwhelming that they haven't addressed that room a little bit better at that position with a more quality player.
Sure, I understand that, but the receiver free agent class group was not particularly strong, I didn't think, and given how strong the wide receiver room is and the wide receiver classes in the draft, I think it's worthwhile attacking that way. And while I think, you know, Arthur Smith's offense will not be copy and pasted from what it looked like in Tennessee and Atlanta to Pittsburgh, there'll be a merger. You know, Smith's offenses typically have not supported three third and fourth string wide receivers. You know, generally it's been one guy mentioned before, A.J. Brown in Tennessee, Drake London in Atlanta. Even the number two is struggling to have consistent production and numbers. So I think you'll have, you know, two receivers on the outside that put up numbers in Pittsburgh this year. But, you know, barring injuries, of course, to have third and fourth string guys really be actively involved. We know Smith's use of 11 personnel is among the lowest in football. I think that just kind of shows that there's going to be less of a need for that this year than compared to seasons past.
What do you think about chance of this team drafting two wide receivers?
Yeah, it's always possible. And double dipping would make a measure of sense. Again, I think when you talk about double dipping, often the board dictates that, where you may not go into a draft saying we need to draft two at X position, but it's where you draft somebody and it's a really strong class overall, and you're sitting there on day three and saying, this is our top guy on the board by a significant margin. So let's take talent. Let's look for guys that can make our roster and get the best player available on day three, because we're not really searching for need. You're just trying to find guys that can, you know, hopefully make your squad and compete. So, it's possible. It just depends on the board. Now, again, receiver being a deep class may lend itself towards those greater odds, but I don't know if you go into the draft saying we're going to take two wide receivers.
All right. One more about a wide receiver question here from Justin Smith, a name I don't recognize. How's it going, fellas? I struggle to see the Steelers taking an early wide receiver in a draft given the system Arthur Smith runs. He says, I think a third round or later guy makes sense given the amount of volume our running backs are about to handle. What are your thoughts? Do you foresee an early wide receiver like a lot of the quote-unquote experts are mocking? Good question, Justin. I will say this. From where we sit, at least right here now, other than this team trading up to maybe get a Rome Odunze or one of the, maybe, you know, the big three, it sure doesn't feel like they're going to take one in round one. Now, we've been wrong about that before. I've just what the tea leaves seem to be pointing to right now is that they won't take one in round one. Beyond that, I think it could be game on any round after that, at least from where we sit right now.
Yeah, I think day two is where it's going to come, at least the first one if they do double dip. Could it be third round? Potentially, if you want to go tackle center in the top two rounds, that is, you know, plausible, and you could certainly easily argue for that to be the case. So I can't tell you exactly where this thing's going to break. And do you remember the comments that Mike Tomlin made that kind of were hinting at center will come before them taking a wide receiver? We'll see if that holds true or not. So I would just say day two, second or third round, is where that receiver will come in.
Higher probability they take one in round three or round two?
Ooh, good question. My mock draft had a second round receiver in there, so I will... that is a really good question. I will lean round two slightly, even though there are those two third round picks that just increase the odds from the pick perspective.
I'll go the other way. I'll go round three just for all the reasons and the kind of guys it seems that they're looking at, and they're being a deep wide receiver class, yada, yada. I'll say slightly higher probability they draft one in round three as opposed to round two.
Okay, fair enough. And speaking of receivers, we're doing the small school week on the site for the scouting reports. I was in some New Haven tape last night, some D2 right. New Haven. You know how hard it is to find New Haven tape? It is not on YouTube.
I can only imagine.
But Dev Holmes, who actually was at Albany FCS, way back, I was down the rabbit hole, Dave, like you often are, watching 2018 Albany versus Pitt, a young Kenny Pickett and the Pitt Panthers beating Albany, but it was Dev Holmes' first career college game. Had a really good game, 100-plus yards and a touchdown for the Albany Great Danes. What a great name that is. But he ended up going to New Haven. Fun player. And so the report is up on the website.
All right. I think we got 90 minutes in. Got through a lot of these questions. Anything else you'd like to add before we get out of here?
Nope. We will come back on Friday.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the show. A lot to talk about today. You can follow me on Twitter/X at SteelersDepot.com. You can follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to complain about me spending all that time on playtime benefits and all like that in this show. I don't know why I do it. I just do it. But all emails, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button. Follow the directions that way. Make sure to create a username and a password. You will need to log in with that to get the actual ad-free version of the site if you've never done that before. Until Friday, go Bucks, go Pens. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.